There's, as all halachic topics do, but even more so, a very high degree of sensitivity. We all know, hopefully live in general by the maxim of Al Tadenes Chavercha Chatagi Alim Komo, of reserving judgment, the topics that we're going to be discussing this week are of the most sensitive and the most delicate nature, and God forbid for anybody, least of all myself, to pass judgment on somebody who finds themselves in a real crisis. We all need to have the discussion around this topic is just so heated that we all need to have a lot of humility. And even if we'll see that something, at least from certain points of view, might be considered beyond the pale, we should have a lot of humanity with respect to the challenges, the very real challenges that people face. The second issue, relatedly, and we'll get to more of his particular position on the topic on Wednesday, is my Rebbe Rav Lichtenstein Zatzal used to refer to paskening shilas involving abortion as the halachic equivalent of a liver transplant. Obviously, a general practitioner doesn't try to perform a liver transplant. It's an extremely complicated medical procedure, the operation per se, the management of it, post-operative management of it. These are really dine nefashos, by very definition. And so the goal this week is not to paskin any one shaila, though of course we'll see practical dimensions of the sugya which arise, but every case by definition has to be treated b'koved rosh, with extensive consultation with all of the relevant parties, the goal this week is not in any way to say this is what should be done in situation X, Y, or Z. That would be the height of both arrogance and irresponsibility. So what I'd like to try to do is divide roughly, though not perfectly, this week's presentation into theory and practice. Today will be a little bit more about theory. Wednesday will be a little bit more about practice in terms of shelos u'tshuvos. But to appreciate the range within the shelos u'tshuvos, what you really have to know are the fundamentals, which I hope to be able to accomplish today. Hayom katzar v'hamlacha meruba. Trust me on this one. There's a lot to be said and done, and so I'd like to proceed as comprehensively as possible, but with the understanding that time is a factor here. The Torah tells us in Parshas Noach, "Shofech dam ha'adam, ba'adam damo yishafech, ki b'tzelem Elohim asa es ha'adam." The simple meaning of the pasuk, of course, is that a person who sheds blood, and the ambient context here is what we call the heter achilas basar. This is the first time in human history that humans were allowed to kill animals for the sake of eating them, but within that framework of shvichas dam as it relates to behema, the Torah is reiterating the isser of shvichas dam ha'adam. Uniquely, a person is endowed with tselem Elokim. The Chizkuni comments on this pasuk, ba'adam damo yishafeich onesh shamanu. So we know that it's a capital crime to murder, azhara minayin, but where exactly is the warning given, right? The punishment is stated here in the pasuk. Says Talmud, just one second, Talmud lomar lo tirtzach, right? That this is actually a pasuk that is the onesh that's affiliated with lo tirtzach, which is going to be very important to see that we're actually dealing with the iser ritzicha. This is the onesh that's associated with it. Now, the Gemara in Sanhedrin, Daf Nun Zayin, is the critical point of departure for the conversation. Mishum Rabbi Shmuel Amru, Af al ha'ubarin. That this pasuk relates even to fetuses. Mnani mile, am Rabbi Yehuda dam berkra, ach es dimchem l'nafshasechem bedrosh, afilu b'dayin echad. When it comes to Bnei Noach, as opposed to Dinei Yisrael, where you need 23 judges in a capital case, here you only need one dayan. Miyad kol chaya afilu shelo behasra, right? Even if there was no warning, edrishenu, so hasra is required b'dinei Yisrael, not b'dinei Noach. Umiyad ha'adam afilu be'edachad, where we need double witness testimony at minimum in any capital case. In dinei Yisrael, in eid echad, single witness testimony is considered sufficient b'dinei Noach, miyad ish velo miyad isha, achiv afilu karov, there's a dispensation for a karov. This is the important part. Mishum Rabbi Shmuel Amru af al ha'ubarin, that this applies not only to humans who are walking around, but it applies to ubarin as well. That for Bnei Noach, terminating ubarin, fetuses, is indeed a capital crime. My time at the Rabbi Shmuel, why does Rabbi Shmuel take this position? Dechsiv shofech adam ha'adam ba'adam. Damo yishafech. Ezehu adam shehu ba'adam. What is an adam within another adam? Right? This is a drush on the pasuk. Have you omer? Zeubar shebemei imo. And so you see, this gave me the title for our shir today, Adam ba'adam. Rabbi Shmuel's view is that an ubar should be perceived of as an adam, literally, physically, within another adam. And just like killing an adam who's outside, walking around in the world, would be a capital crime. At least as far as Bnei Noach are concerned, it would be a capital crime to kill an adam be'adam. Now, this isn't the only view in the Tanaim. It's very important to note, because we'll have to deal with, do we actually paskin like Rabbi Shmuel? Certainly one of the greatest of the Rishonim did. But there is a dissenting view in the Gemara, v'tanakamba tana deve mnashehu, de'amar kol misa hamur alivnei noach eino elechenek. That this pasuk is teaching me something different, that when we mete out capital punishment, we know that for Jews there are four different options, skila, sreifa, hereg, vachenek. But when it comes to non-Jews, this view, the Tana Devei Menashe, wants to say that the Misa Ha'amura Livnei Noach is in fact the din of chenek, of strangulation, based on pasuk. I apologize that it's a little bit graphic, but dam ha'adam ba'adam, that when you strangle somebody, right, there's no blood which is coming out of the person, but they die of asphyxiation. So this is chenek. Okay, so v'shadi lehai ba'adam asefe dekra, v'darish be'hachi ba'adam damo yishafeich ezu shvichos dam shel adam. What is capital punishment shehu begufo shel adam that takes place internally? Havi omer ze chenek. Now Rashi comments in this Gemara within the sheet of Rabbi Shmuel af al ha'ubarin. He says hika sa'isha biyatsu yiladeha neragalehen. Right, if a ben Noach would cause a woman to miscarry, right? There was some altercation, so that would be a capital crime. Uvisrael ad sheyetze la'avir ha'olam. But when it comes to a Jew, based on a Gemara Nida that we'll get to, the Gemara Nida and Daf Mem Dalid, so there is no capital crime. We don't know yet what Rashi's view is. Maybe there's still an act of murder here, but there's certainly no capital punishment until you're dealing with a child who's been yotze la'avir ha'olam, as the Gemara Nida Daf Mem Dalet says, k'ditan masachta nida tinok ben yomechad ha'horgo chayav. So it has to be, it doesn't literally mean yomechad, it doesn't have to be 24 hours, it could be 2 seconds. But the point is, yotzei la'avir ha'olam. So what we have in the Gemara in Sanhedrin is a machlokas between Rabbi Shmuel and the Tana Devei Menashe. Rabbi Shmuel's view clearly being that abortion, termination of a fetus, at least within certain framework, is a capital crime. It's Ritzicha, affiliated with an Onesh Misa. And then we have the Tana Devei Menashe, who says that Pasuk is teaching me something completely different, namely that the Stam Misa, which is given to Bnei Noach, is in fact Chenek. So how do we paskin? Well, the Rambam, it's unequivocal. The Rambam writes the following in Hilchos Simlachim in Perek Tes, Halacha Dalet. This is where the Rambam deals in general with all the Dinei Bnei Noach. Ben Noach, the Rambam writes here, this is the sixth source, Shaharag es hanefesh, afilu ubar b'me'imo nerag alav. Right, so the Rambam says, Ben Noach that kills any nefesh, right, it's critical that he's using that term, we'll see, especially contra Rashi, even if we're talking about an ubar b'me'imo, a fetus, so not only is that an act of murder, but it's punishable by death. V'cheinim harag treifa, if he kills somebody who we don't expect to live at least for another 12 months, o she kifaso unesano lifnei ari, o she nicho berav ad shemes, or cases where one is indirectly causing somebody's death, cases what we would call generally of grama, that you tie a person up and you throw him in front of a wild animal. No, you didn't tear the person, you know, to death. The lion did, but you certainly were responsible for their death, morally and practically. Or you lock somebody in a room and don't feed them, and 2 weeks later you find them dead of starvation. So These are all not only acts of murder for Ben Noach, but they're punishable by death. Ho'ol v'hemis mikol makom ne'rag. V'chein im harag rodef shi'achol la'atzilo be'achad me'evarav ne'rag alav. Or the use of disproportionate force against the rodef. And this is very important. If you could have stopped the rodef by saying stop, or by shooting him in the leg, and you decide to shoot him in the head, for no good reason, he could have been neutralized. The threat could have been neutralized in a much, much simpler fashion. So that too is a capital crime for Ben Noach. Ma she'ein kein b'Yisrael. So these four words in the Rambam, ma she'ein kein b'Yisrael, right? One could interpret them in principle in one of two ways. But we'll see that that's only in principle. In practice, it's very clear what the Rambam means. One could have said ma she'ein kein b'Yisrael, meaning that there's no onesh misa, but the Rambam certainly would consider these to be examples of ritzicha. If a Jew would do any of these things, it is a crime of murder. It's just that we don't give the same punishment for Jews. There's a certain permission structure there with respect to the onesh. Or maybe the reason that you don't have an onesh is you don't have ritzicha altogether. So the words mashen kin b'Yisrael themselves, just one second, Joseph, are not dispositive. I just want to make sure that we understand Shitas HaRambam and then absolutely take the question. So the Rambam clearly is pastoring like Rabbi Yishmael. And just the icing on the cake here is that we see that the Rambam explicitly rejects the interlocutor, right? He explicitly rejects the Tana de Beit Menashe, because you see here, Ben Noach she'avar lachas misheva mitzos elu, when a Ben Noach violates any of the mitzos B'nei Noach, yehareg b'sayev. It's not misas chenek, but it's misas sayev. So you can see that he passes like Rabbi Yishmael, he rejects the Tana de Beit Menashe. So the Kesef Mishnah, that I'd like to get from the Bechilta, and then Reb Meir Simcha, the Meshech Chachma, and then we'll go over to Joseph. Right, so the Kesef Mishnah explains the Rambam's position. Mishum Rabbi Yishmael Amru, Ben Noach Nera Gafalu Barin. He says that's the source of the Rambam. Dechsev Shofech Dam Adam Ba Adam Damu Yishafech. Eze Hu Adam Shuba Adam. Hevi Omer Ze Ubar Shemei Ima U Pasak Rabbeinu Ki Rabbi Yishmael. So the Kesef Mishnah, no less an authority than Rabbi Yosef Karo, tells us that this is indeed the source of the Rambam. Mishum De Tana De Paligalei Darish Mehai Krash and Misas Bnei Noach Bechenek, right? The Tana de Menashe learned something completely different, which the Rambam rejected. Rabbeinu Sover Shu Besayev. So we can see unequivocally what Shitas HaRambam is. Uchemoshe Yisbar Behilchos and Mela Kam Hilchasa Ki Rabbi Yishmael. Now the Mechilta says, apropos this point, that it's unfathomable that whatever is considered Ritzicha for Bnei Noach is not equally Ritzicha for members of Klal Yisrael. So this is the statement of Isi ben Akiva that weighed very heavily in Rav Lichtenstein's thinking on the topic. Isi ben Akiva Omer Kodem Matan Torah Hayinu Muzharim Al Shvichos Damrim La'achar Matan Torah Tacha Shehuchmaru Huklu. Instead of being more machmir, right, that when we became members of Klal Yisrael, then what? All of a sudden we have lower standards in terms of, you know, what defines Ritzicha. Be'emes Amru Potter. Midine basar v'dam v'dina and masar l'shamayim. Is that what we mean when we say Masha ein kein li Yisrael? It's just that it's not subject to misas bezdin. Okay, but just like if we would all agree, if a Jew was horeg es hatrefa, you go and kill somebody who has metastatic glioblastoma and he's going to die within a year, by all accounts, we would all consider that to be a grievous act of murder. Right? The Rambam groups that together with ubar b'mei imo. And indeed, that is the position of Reb Meir Simcha as well. Let me just read this inside, where Reb Meir Simcha wants to know what exactly is the meaning of the pasuk Shofech Dam HaAdam BaAdam Damo Yishafech Ki B'Tzalem Elokim Asas HaAdam. So we know for Bnei Noach, it's Ritzicha coupled with a capital punishment. So what is it for Klal Yisrael? So the Meshech Chachma writes the following: Shabbat Shabbason Kolosev Om Belacham Yumas. So it says V'nei B'chol Makom D'chsev Misa. Ksiv Mosimas, a typical formulation in the Torah, when there's a death penalty meted out by a Bezdin, it uses a double language of Mos Yumas. Levad Makomos Yotzi Minakal, except a number of cases. Ksiv Hashor Yisakel Vagamba Lav Yumas, Vize Misa Bide Shamayim, Kidadarash Mbechelta. What we mean here is Misa Bide Shamayim. Vachin Had Ksiv Parsha Semar, Makay Behema Yishlamena, Makay Adam Yumas. V'yitachen demake adam kai al ubarin. Sheken ksiv, shofech dam ha'adam ba'adam, haynu ubar, right, based on Rabbi Shmuel, damo yishafech, sheben Noach nerag aleihem, for Ben Noach, the capital punishment will be meted out by Bezdin Shalmata, v'Yisrael nimsar misaso l'dinei shamayim. So this is a very important school of thought that we're dealing here with what is unequivocally an Isser Ritzicha. The only distinction between Bnei Noach and members of Klal Yisrael is what exactly the punishment is going to be. For Bnei Noach, the punishment is going to be Misas Bezdin, right, in terms of their Dayanim with all of the appropriate changes. For Klal Yisrael, the punishment for this Isser Ritzicha of Hapala Subarin, Dam Ha'adam Ba'adam, will be Misa Bidei Shemayim. Joseph, thanks for your patience. I appreciate it. Okay, very good.
So I think we need to discuss that in the 21st century when we live in a society, especially when we live in a society where the Nachri is not some other, but it's our neighbor. We have to understand why Halacha is saying this, why the Rambam's position would be something that I should not think is terrible, which I don't want to.
Right. Okay, excellent. So hopefully on Wednesday, when we get into a little bit more of the practical discussions, we will touch on that. Right now, I just want to try to build up the building blocks systematically so that we can all appreciate the legal development. But that is indeed a very important question, an important moral question, which you could see already in what Isi ben Akiva is saying. It was inconceivable to him, forget about the punishment, but just in terms of the crime. If you're defining this as murder for Bnei Noach, how could it be any less than murder for us? So what you're saying is already very, very valuable at the level of defining what is the Avera that we're talking about here when Rabbi Yishmael says, Shofech dam ha'adam ba'adam afilu al ha'ubarin. Okay, so that's going to be very, very, very important. Okay, so now let's...
We find other things with it where, you know, for Ben Noach, the standard is stricter. Like, for example, by Shechita, by Mefar case, which for an animal...
Right, okay, so what Jackie is referring to, and this is an important point, and I do hope to be able to return to this on Wednesday, is that very, very often, and we're going to get to this in a moment, so we have a foundational principle, and again, I would have gotten to this in order, so I don't want to put the horse before the cart, but or the cart before the horse. I always get that one backwards. There is a principle of Mika Midi Dili Yisrael Shari Livnei Noach Aser. So there's a Talmudic principle that there can't be something which is permissible for non-Jews, or that there's something which is permissible for Jews which is prohibited for non-Jews. No, that doesn't mean it has to necessarily be the same prohibition. So what Jackie is referring to is a very famous example of what we call Behema Mifarcheses. So let's say if you do shchita to an animal, and the animal is still seizing around, right, it sometimes happens, and then during that moment you eat from the animal. For a non-Jew, that would be Eiver Min HaChai, and then by definition a capital crime. For a Jew, it would be an Isser D'oraisa, so it would only be Lo Sochlu Adam, would be a less severe violation. So that's going to weigh in here. One of the really important questions, Jackie, we're going to have to look at is the Mi'ika Midi principle. Does that establish that by definition it has to be an Isser D'oraisa, or maybe it's just an Isser D'rabbana, even if the Torah hasn't otherwise prohibited this? So again, I don't want to get too far ahead of ourselves, otherwise we're not going to be able to have a systematic appreciation of what really is an incredibly elegant and really, really important topic. Okay, so let's go to the Mishnah and Olos. A lot of people start the analysis here, though I prefer to start where we did. Ha'isha shimaksha leleid, you have a woman who's life is presumably in danger. She's in the process of giving birth, and it's not going well. So not only are we permitted to, it seems like we're obligated to terminate this nearly born child, whatever it takes, even if it means to sever it limb by limb, lo aleinu, mipnei shechayah kod min lechayav. Right, so that clause right there is very consequential. It would seem, once again, and this would be music to the Rambam's ears, no doubt, that we're imputing life to the fetus. We're just saying that for whatever reason that we don't know yet, her life takes priority over the life of this as yet unborn child. However, Yatza Rubo, once the child's majority has come out, we're not going to deal with how we measure the majority, because that's a bit of a technical issue, which is beyond our scope. Ein noginbo, we can't even touch it. We can't do anything one way or the other. Mipnei shein docha nefesh mipnei nefesh, because we can't privilege one life over the other. So we have an obvious difficulty here, right? Because based on the end of the Mishnah, it sounds like what's the point at which we relate to the ubar as a nefesh? Only following birth. Right, according to the Reish of the Mishnah, the first half of the Mishnah, it sounds like we're already relating to this as a life, you know, earlier. So this discordance in the Mishnah occupied the greatest rabbinic minds of the last 2,000 years, the Gedolei HaRishonim and the Gedolei HaAchronim. But everybody needs to just appreciate the tension to be part of the conversation. On the one hand, right, as long as the Ubar B'mei Imo, for whatever reason, we're taking the position that chayeha kod min lechayav. Right? Again, the Rambam would really like that, right? Because you're talking about a nefesh, you're talking about a life. You're just saying, for whatever reason, that her life comes first. But once there is this point of demarcation of yatza la'avir ha'olam, we can no longer privilege her life over his life because of this principle of ein dochen nefesh mipnei nefesh. But if you're going to appeal to ein dochen nefesh mipnei nefesh, so then, as Reb Chaim wrote about, as Reb Yisrael Zalman wrote about, as everybody, Reb Kiveva wrote about, say, wait a second, wasn't it a nefesh when it was B'mei Imo? Did we call it, Chayav? So this is a great difficulty. So let me just show you, you know, how this gets processed. And it leads to the second major school of thought, which we'll basically call the school of Rashi. But let's work backwards here. So the Tosas Yom Tov, Reb Yom Tov Lipman Heller, 16th century Krakow, the 12th source, Mechatchines Avlad Mea Dechozman, Shelo Yatzalav Yerolam, Lav Nefeshu. He says it's very simple. You know why the principle of Ein Dochen Nefesh Mipnei Nefesh is only actionable once the Ubar is Yotze La'avir La'olam? It must be that before that, it's not really considered a Nefesh. Now, obviously, the difficulty with that approach is if it's not a Nefesh, then why do you have to say Chayeha Kod Min L'Chayev? It's obvious, it's not even a life yet. Why do you even need such a teaching? Okay, so the Tosas Yantif is going to have that difficulty, but he'll live with that. Right? V'nitzan lahargo lahatzos imo. Okay, and he says that this is based on Rashi, which we'll see in a second. The Tiferes Yisrael, Rabbi Yisrael Lifshitz, also Nigidole ha'achronim, along similar lines, v'nesha chaya kodim l'chayev, l'chor rakasha maze hatam. He says, I don't understand. Well, why do you need this rationale? Right? If it's not a nefesh, till it's yotzei la'avir ha'olam, so, of course, her life takes priority. There's only one life here, as long as we're talking about a pregnancy. Right? The Ubar's life wouldn't be something that rises to the level of a nefesh. Rezo atzma the kamer bereisha. So, v'nirli d'hachi kamer, d'afilu yadina mevadai shekalu lo chadashav, even though we're very confident that this is going to be a viable child, afilu hachi chayach akodim d'chayav, right? Kedima zmanis, d'chol o'ot shubimei imo, lav nefesh chai mikri. The way that Tiferes Yisrael wants to square the circle is along the lines of the Tosfos Yontif, very similar. It's basically to say that, yeah, it's not a full nefesh, right? Nefesh chai requires it to be born, so we see it as a great potential for life. Just one second, Isaac. We see it as having potential for life, it's a viable life, and nonetheless, right, it's not full life. Taharei b'nogeif isha harav yatsu yiladeha. And he wants to bring a raya, which was already referenced before, that when somebody, just one second, causes a miscarriage, right, the punishment is only monetary, and if it was really an nefesh, we would expect a much more severe penalty. So this Mishnah in Oalos, very famously, is presented by, is cited by the Gemara in Sanhedrin, Ayin Beis, I should say. Let's see Rashi there, because Rashi is really the father of this entire school of thought. And then again, when we get to this end of the section, I'll take the questions. I just want to make sure that we're properly building an infrastructure and understanding. So the Gemara in Sanhedrin, Ayin Beis, Amid Beis, Amir Avuta, Katan Harodev Nitan Latzilo Benavsho. So you have a situation where you have a child to, in Alpi Halacha, you can't ever give an onesh to a child. So you have a child chasing somebody, threatening their life. So you're allowed to, in some cases, as we'll see, mandated to terminate the life of that child. We're not talking about Numar, it just could be any child. You can't give a child an onesh, but the principle of Rodev is Haba lahargacha, Hashkin lahargo, and that applies to third parties as well. Not as an onesh, because nothing's happened yet, but preemptively, we must save the life of a nirdev. Kasava Rodev eno tzarech chasra, it must be that a Rodev doesn't require a chasra, because to receive chasra, you have to be a bardas, you have to be at the Gil of Mitzvot, Loshna Gadol, Loshna Kata. So this led the Gemara to reference our Mishnah in Olos, which really became the great point of departure in the conversation. Esvim v'chisler v'una, yatsa rosho enokin bo, l'fishen dochen nefesh v'pnei nefesh, v'amai rodefu. Wait a second. If a katan can be a rodef, so who cares if the katan is 11, 9, 7, 5, 3, or 2 seconds old, right? This is still rodef, the mother. What's this language of ein docha nefesh mipnei nefesh? So the Gemara says something which is almost totally inscrutable. So it says, shani hasam di mishamaya karat fila. That's a different case. It doesn't really fit into the normal rubric of rodef. In practical terms, it's certainly rodef, right? If the mother wasn't struggling to give birth, she wouldn't be al saf hamavet. She wouldn't be facing death. So in practical terms, it's rodef. But as Reb Chaim would later write, as we'll get to on Wednesday, we cannot apply the din of rodef. That is to say, we cannot apply the principle of haba lahargacha hashkein vahargo and privilege at this point the mother's life over the now born child's life, which implies, of course, that prior to that we could. But if you take a look at Rashi here, and you'll see Rashi was, to be sure, the antecedent of the Tiferes Yisrael and the Tosos Yantif. Rashi writes, Yatzarubo, Beisha Makshe Leleid, Umisukenes, her life is in danger. Ktani Resha, Chayo Poshetas Yada, Vichot Chaso, Motziyaz Levarim, Dechol Zman, Shalo Yatzal Avir Haolam, Lav Nefesh Hu. So again, what Rashi did with that Mishnah Olos is to say the following. The principle of Ein Docha Nefesh, Ripnei Nefesh, perforce, only applies once it's Yotzel Avir Haolam, because prior to that, we don't have a nefesh. The only life that we're talking about here is the life of the mother. Maybe we have the potential for life, right? That's the way that the Tiferes Yisrael formulated it. So we have a fundamental machlokas between Rashi and the Rambam as to what our classification of ubar b'meya imo is. The Rambam, based on Rabbi Yishmael, dam ha'adam ba'adam, related to the ubar as a nefesh. Now again, of course, the question is going to be, if that's true, why then is there a permission structure, kol zman, that nefesh is within the mother, according to the Rambam, to take the life of that ubar? I thought we had a principle of ein docha nefesh mipnei nefesh. So as you can well anticipate, based on the Gemara and Sanhedrin, what one-word principle is the Rambam going to have to appeal to? The only time, the only exception to the otherwise categorical principle of ein docha nefesh mipnei nefesh, when are we allowed to privilege one life over the other? In one word, rodef. Exactly right. So that if it's an ubar, it's a rodef. If it's born, it's no longer a rodef. And if that doesn't seem obvious to you, you're like in really good company. Because Rabbi Kiva Eger, Rabbi Chaim, Rabbi Isser Zalman, and essentially all of the greatest rabbinic minds in the last 2,000 years said, Rambam, you've got to choose. Right? If it was a rodef then, it's a rodef now. If it's a nefesh then, it's a nefesh now. So you see what Rashi's trying to do. Rashi was deeply aware of this problem. So what Rashi opted for, not that this resolves all the issues, because we still have that difficult resha of the Mishnah, right, of chayeha kod min l'chayav. It sounds like we're imputing life to the ubar, but Rashi says, I'll live with that problem rather than the other problem. So let me just get Rabbi Kiva Eger onto the record here, and then I will take all of the questions that people had. So Rabbi Kiva Eger, we're going to move ahead to the 18th source here. So, quotes the sheet of the Rambam. Rabbi Kiva Eger does. The Rambam says, "Mutar lachtoch ubar b'meya bin b'sam bin b'yad, do whatever you need. It could be a medical abortion, it could be a surgical abortion. Right? Mibnei shehu kirode v'achara v'hu tamua." So this is astonishing. L'chora,
Rubo.
right? Because if it was really Rodev, says Rabbi Akiva Eger, it didn't stop being a Rodev just because it was born. As we said, you could have a Katan who's 11 years old who's a Rodev, right? You can't give a Katan an Onesh Misa, so it's got to still be a Rodev. Mishum de'ubar lo nikra nefesh. So Rabbi Akiva Eger says, I'm going to cast my lot with Rashi. And so where we are right now, before we get to the critical Gemara and Arachin, which will be sort of the next major turning point in the sugya, is to say that it appears that we have the following. And I really want to emphasize this point, because one of the phenomenon in this incredibly heated sugya is what I call the phenomenon of halachic overreach. There's a lot of literature where, if you're sort of more affiliated with Rashi's point of view, there's an attempt to pull Rambam over to Rashi's side, I think at great cost to the simple understanding of Rambam, and vice versa. If you want to go in the definite in the direction of Ritzicha, that an Ubar is really a Nefesh, and any termination of the Ubar is actually Ritzicha, there's a lot of rereading that happened of both Rashi and Tosfos. And I can see why people did that, great people that we're going to see. It's much easier to say that everybody agrees about these things, but my point of view, as you'll see over the course of the next year and a half, is that there actually is foundational machlokas here. One cannot begin to approach the sugya of hapalas ubarim, of abortion, without understanding an even more important question. The status of abortion, from a halachic point of view, is really a secondary question. The primary question is, what is the status of an ubar? What is the status of a fetus? And it seems that we have a fundamental divergence with respect to this question between Rambam and Rashi. And that's really what I wanted to establish in the first half hour today. And I really appreciate your patience in establishing that point. And then I'll make two additional points today, and then move to resolutions of the Rambam and practical elements, Mirtz Hashem, on Wednesday. But Isaac, I really appreciate your patience. Thank you. Okay, so you've essentially anticipated the entire second half of Wednesday's shiur with that question. But it is striking that we haven't seen any evidence in the Gemara as such. Okay? And that's going to be a very important issue.
Can you repeat the question?
Yes, I apologize. Let me repeat that question. What Isaac was wondering about was, up until now, I've been speaking categorically about a fetus, but can we differentiate between various stages within fetal development? In other words, if the Rambam's position is indeed that a fetus is a nefesh, right, so what does that mean exactly? Is it a nefesh, you know, from the moment of conception? What about Arba'im Yom Liyitzir HaSavlad? What about Shlosha Chadashim Keneged Hakara Sa'ubar? We're going to see all of these as very important time points. And I'm saving that for Wednesday. You'll see with good reason. But the fact is, it is striking that the Gemara itself does not prima facie seems to raise that question. Yes, and thank you for your patience.
I understand there is such a concept as a nephil before 30 days. So why is that not? If you kill a baby when it's only 2 weeks old, is that considered a nephil?
The answer is, yeah, excellent question. In 99% of cases, the Gemara Nida Daf Mem Dalet asks that question and says even a 1 minute old baby, terminating that baby, killing that baby is a capital crime. Because we have no reason to assume that it was a nephil. There can be a reusa, there can be various empirically undermining elements. If we see that there was something about this child where we would not expect it to be able to live out 30 days, it certainly would be an act of ritzicha, it would be an act of murder, but it would not be punishable by an onesh misa.
But the concept of a nephil is that if he did not live 30 days, he's not considered a burial. So over here, the one, it doesn't make sense. So when do we have the concept of nephil?
Right. So respectfully, I would challenge your basic premise. I'm not aware of any source that would indicate that a nephil is not considered a human life. So, and therefore, termination of a child, or any life for that matter, where we did not expect a person to have even a gosace, a person to have great longevity is still considered an act of murder. Now, there are many halachos that pertain to an eifel that are important to be mindful of, some of them that relate to Shabbos, pikuach nefesh on Shabbos, but I think that your starting premise does need to be revisited. Okay, so let's take a look at the next major point in the sugya, which is the Gemara in Arachin on Daf Zayin. And this obviously has to be evaluated within the fulcrum that we've developed between the perspectives of Rambam and Rashi as it concerns the Ubar, if I could say unborn life. So Amar of Nachman, Amar Shmuel. This is a din of Shmuel. You have it in the 19th source. Isha sheyashva ala mashber umesa. Tragically, the woman has already expired. She's died in the process of childbirth. And it was on Shabbos, Mevi'in Sakin, and Makarin is Kresa, Motzin es Havlad, that we should still do what we would call basically a cesarean section to try to extract the child before the child will die, because the child can't survive without, of course, any source of life. So the Gemara says, well, that's like totally obvious. Pshita, which is interesting. A lot of the Shelos Uchubos that we'll see on Wednesday are going to focus on that word, Pshita. Like, of course, we're going to do everything we can to save this Ubar. So I would just pause right here. If you take the Pshita perspective, you might say the early returns on the Gemara may be in the direction of the Rambam. But let's take a look. So the Gemara says, Pshita mayavid mechate chabasahu. The Gemara is assuming that's not even an Issa Daraisa for now. So Amar Rabba lo nitzrecha lahavi sakin derech rishas harabim. So the answer that the Gemara gives is that no, that there would be chilul Shabbos Daraisa. You'd have to violate Hotzah, because apparently they didn't have a scalpel present, so you'd have to bring a scalpel, and there was no Eruv. So you could even be Mechalel Shabbos Daraisa, you could commit an Isser Skila to try to save an Ubar. Okay, so if you're the Rambam so far, you're probably pretty happy, you know, with this Gemara, because what it seems to establish is only Pikuach Nefesh is Docha Shabbos. It must be that an Ubar is a Nefesh, grist for the Rambam's mill. My Kamash Malan, so what's this? You know, what's the value added of this Gemara? Says, you know, the Gemara asks, to misveka mechalin shabasa? You want to tell me that it's just a safek to be able to save this Ubar? Who knows whether we're really going to get there in time, right? Every second is precious. Tanina, we already have this in Masech Tayom, Mishanafu of Mapolas, a person, Lo Aleinu, like they had in, right, on Miami Beach, a condominium collapses, you know. So, Safik Usham, Safik Enusham, I don't know if the person is there. Safik Chai, Safik Mes, if they were there, they could likely be dead already. Safik Kanani, Safik Israel, we don't know whether or not the person is Jewish. The bottom line is we always save life on Shabbos, but that seems to be, when it comes to non-Jewish life, for a secondary reason of Mishum Eva. That doesn't apply to a Keratosha, but let's say an idolater. That appears to be the halacha. So anyway, the Gemara is saying, don't we know that even in cases of, you know, very remote chances of saving life, here it's a sfeika, that only in a case of triple suffik that we would still violate Shabbos, mefakhin ala besagal, we would get bulldozers and try to pull the rubble and the debris array away. So ma'u desema, so the Gemara says, no, here's the value added of our Gemara, and this is where things shift pretty dramatically. So ma'u desema hasam hu dehavile chezka dechiyusa. Right, that case in Yuma was a case where the chazaka was that the person was alive. Excellent, Yehuda. So aval hacha, but in our case of the ubar, de lo havale chazaka dechiyusa meikara. Anybody want to translate those words? Right, where the ubar was not considered alive before. Right, meikara emalo, so kamash malan. So what is the kamash malan? The kamash malan could either be reversed, one of two assumptions. Right, you could say that, well, yeah, despite the fact that there was no cheskas chayim, nonetheless, where the chiddush of the Gemara is that we're mechalel Shabbos, even for the sake of saving potential life, but not full life, okay? Or one could say that the kamash malan causes us to reevaluate our understanding of what an ubar is, that an ubar is no different than somebody that had been walking around. Okay, so it depends how you read that. Now, obviously, the early returns, if I said you got to wait, it was a little bit of a Rambam mirage, right? The early returns on the Gemara were definitely in favor of the Rambam. The Gemara evolves much more in the direction of Rashi. So the Rambam did something, and I don't mean this, God forbid, in an irreverent way. But the Rambam, Kedarko Bakodesh, was extremely careful with respect to how he formulated this Gemara. If you take a look here at the 20th source, this is the Rambam in Hilchos Shabbos, and somebody, I hope, will pick up on what the Rambam did with this Gemara. So the Rambam writes, Ha'isha she'yashva al-mashber, umesa, tragically, she passes away in childbirth, mevi'in sakin b'shabbos afilu derech rosh ha'sarabim v'karin eskresa motzin esavad, sir mechal shabbos deraisa, shema yimatzei chai, she'safek nefashos doches ha'shabbos, right, the Rambam, Safik Nefasha is no different than this, or a 7-year-old, or a 17-year-old, or a 37-year-old. V'afilu l'zeh she'ein chezkaso chai. What did the Rambam do with the Gemara? He made a subtle but profound emendation. Right? The Gemara referred to a cheskas chiyusa me'ikara, right? Which made it sound like we didn't really relate to this as a life, unlike somebody that had been walking around and a mapolis falls on them. What did the Rambam say? That even in this case, where the chances are that they're not really going to be able to get there in time, right? Ein cheskaso chai. So the Rambam made, right, l'shitaso, completely consistent with his view. He was very, I'm sure, disturbed by that reading of the Gemara in Erechin that would suggest that an ubar is any less than a nefesh, right? For the Rambam, the only permission structure to terminate the ubar would be a threat to the life of the mother. Now, why that's true, we haven't figured out yet, because if it's really a rodef inside the mother, it should be a rodef when it's outside the mother also. Again, that requires much further analysis. From this point of view, I just wanted to point out, hopefully there's some value added here, you know, the Shulchan Aruch thousands of times codifies the words of the Rambam verbatim. But here, the Shulchan Aruch, you see that he wanted to accept the psak of the Rambam, but he knew that the words of the Rambam themselves were highly speculative with respect to the actual text of the Gemara. So the Mechaber writes, "Hayoshevus al mashper mesim v'in sakin b'shabbos v'il derech v'shus harabim v'korin bitna u'motzin havlad shema yimatzei chai." He just ends it off there. He doesn't include the much more controversial seifa, the ending of the Rambam, where the Rambam, you know, basically rewords the Gemara to suit his own purposes. Okay, so far what we've established is that Leisman de Palig, that we're going to be Mechal Shabbos for in Ubar, but the question, of course, is why, right? If you're the Rambam, you want to defend very strongly the point of view is that in principle, it's no different than being Mechal Shabbos for a 37-year-old or a 27-year-old or a 7-year-old, even if just the chances are lower that we'll be able to save a life. Nonetheless, you know, Safek Nefashos is Doches HaShabbos, fakes, 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 fakes. We'll do whatever we can to try to save a life. According to Rashi, that Gemara reads, you know, more consistently with his view. The Chiddush is that even though we're not dealing with a Nefesh per se, we should be Mechal HaShabbos, not just to save a life, but to save potential life. Okay? So again, how you're going to see the Gemara in Erechin is going to be controlled through the prism, the framework that we've established on the basis of the running dispute between Rashi and the Rambam. So this just leaves us a few minutes to get into the principle that we already alluded to, apropos Jackie's point on the Zoom, the principle of mi'ika midi, and this will sort of lay the gauntlet for our discussion on Wednesday. So the Gemara in Sanhedrin Daf Nun Tes, full disclosure, I could have just as easily chosen the Gemara Nechulin and Daf Lamed Gimel, because they're substantively the same. They quote the same basic principle. So it says, Livnei Noach, if we have a directive to Bnei Noach, such as the one that we're dealing with, Shofech Dam Adam Badam Damo Yishafech, but Lo Nishneis B'Sinai, and it's not repeated at any later stage in the Torah, we would say, L'Yisrael Nemra V'lo Livnei Noach. So that seems highly counterintuitive. Why would that be? Adrab, Lo Nishneis B'Sinai, Livnei Noach Nemra V'lo L'Yisrael. It should be the opposite. If it's only said at the early stage of the Torah, it's never repeated after Har Sinai, we should assume that it's a universal obligation, but it is not a particular obligation for Jews. The Gemara says, you're right in principle, but that simply cannot be. Why? There can't be anything in this world which is permissible for a Jew and prohibited for a non-Jew. So the Bali HaTosfos addressed this issue in two different places. And this becomes like a critically important part of our discussion. So Tosfos in Sanhedrin says, well, what about what we actually discussed the first shiur of the year? What about the question of Shabbos and Talmud Torah? We know there that on the books there's a prohibition for a non-Jew to keep Shabbos, and there's a prohibition for a non-Jew to study Torah. Morasha Kilas Yaakov, Mandamer Morasha, Gezel, Mandamer Murasa, Giloy Arayos. So that's Tosfos' question. So he says, none of this applies in a situation where there is a parallel mitzvah for members of Klal Yisrael. The principle of Mika Midi is that Jews cannot possibly be held to a lower standard. But if Jews are obligated to keep Shabbos, and non-Jews are obligated not to keep Shabbos, that's not a problem, because it's not as if we have a lower standard, we just have a divergent set of responsibilities. Okay? So then, the Balei HaTosfos turn their attention to our subject and say, well, what about Ubarin? Right? So let's take a look at that inside. This is the 25th source. Mihu Kasha, 5 lines from the bottom. Tosfos assumes that in such a situation, that even at the threat to the life of a mother, there'd be no permission structure. We have a principle of ein docha nefesh mipnei nefesh. Why would you be allowed, right, in that situation, to privilege the life of the ubar over the life, or the life of the mother, or vice versa, to privilege the life of the mother over the life of the ubar? So that seems to be a situation d'li Yisrael shari lo b'kochavim aser. So Tosfos provides two answers, which of course are 180 degrees opposite each other. Say shlomar dehanami b'Yisrael mitzvah k'dei lahatzil. The first answer in Tosfos maintains the fundamental assumption that there is no permission structure when it comes to non-Jews for the life of the mother. Okay, but for Jews, not only is there a permission structure, there's an obligation to save the life of the mother. That's the first answer in Tosfos. The second answer in Tosfos, which is far more tentative, I acknowledge, ve'efshar dafilu be'ovid kochavim shari. Right? It says, no, maybe this is even permissible for non-Jews. Okay? Maybe even non-Jews are allowed to make a decision at that point to privilege the life of the mother over the life of the ubar. Tosfos says it very tentatively, ve'efshar, but it's two deos in the Balei HaTosfos. So again, with respect to the problem of mi'ika midi, is there anything that could be permissible for Jews and prohibited for non-Jews? Tosfos gives two answers with respect to the life of the mother question. Number one, it's not permissible for Jews. It's a mandate. Just like Jews must keep Shabbos, just like Jews must study Torah, Jews must spare the life of the mother. This isn't a heter. This is a mechayev. The second answer is, no, maybe non-Jews would be allowed, in this case, to terminate the ubar to save the life of the mother. I have a lot to say about this, which we'll get back to, God willing, on Wednesday. But to conclude, to show you Tosfos in Nida, where Tosfos deals with this issue as well. So Vim Tomar, take a look here, and please note the language, because this became perhaps the most heated of all of the controversies within the great controversy as to what the status of Hapala Zubarin is. Im Timso Lomar, Demutra Lahargo Bebeten, Afilo Mesa Imo, Vilo Havi Kimunach Bekufsa, Amai Mechalin of Ezashabish, Mavian Sakin Derech Rosh Hasarabim, Likroa Ha'im, Kedemuchach Perakama de Erechin. So Tosfos's question is essentially the following. He says, we saw the Gemara in Erechin, which gives a permission structure and maybe even a mandate of Pikuach Nefesh Ha'ubar at the expense of Chilul Shabbos Doraisa. So why is it, Tosfos is asking here from the Gemara in Masech Tachulin and Daf Nun Ches, that if you have a pregnant woman who's sentenced to a capital punishment, that we put her to death right away? We don't wait for her to give birth. We say, shouldn't we just wait around and allow her to give birth? Now, why is that? So he says, Yeshlomer de mikol makom bishum pikuach nefesh mechalav as a Shabbos, avogav de mutter largo, even though there is, in general, situations where it's totally permissible. He uses the term mutter, not pater, mutter largo, to kill a fetus within its mother, de hagoses bideyadam ahargo pater, k'damer berakan yisrafin, rov goses in the misa, right? Even though that's an issue of Ritzicha, nonetheless, there's not going to be a capital crime. Mechalim is a Shabbos Alav, but you would certainly be Mechal Shabbos, even to extend the life of a Gozes by 1 minute. Kidamar Perek Basud Yoma, the Ein Mechalchim Bepikuach Nefesh, Achar Haro. That when it comes to Pikuach Nefesh, we don't follow the majority. That even if this Gozes is going to, in all likelihood, die, we'll pull out all the stops for them. So here, Tosfos twice uses the term mutter, not potter. I'm not talking about avoiding an onesh, but that it would be permissible, literally permissible under certain cases, to terminate an ubar abimei imo, despite the fact that if it's only a question of only, quote-unquote, a question of chol Shabbos, will certainly be mechal Shabbos d'oraisa to save what Rashi would term this potential life. Rav Moshe Feinstein, as we'll see on Wednesday, was so distressed by this Tosfos that he famously imputed not a Ta'os Sofer, but a double Ta'os Sofer. Couldn't believe that the Balei HaTosfos would, under any circumstance, countenance the idea that it could be possible to terminate an Ubar Me'imo. And they say it's just a Ta'os Sofer twice over. We'll see even more radical language from Rav Moshe Feinstein. But again, the Balei HaTosfos do say so, and as I said before, this wouldn't be the first time. Not that Rashi ever said it was fundamentally permissible, but Rashi did note that we weren't dealing here with a nefesh. So what we achieved today is the following. Let me just summarize and distill and then turn things over to Rabbi Angel. Is that it would appear that the status of Hapalas Ubarin in Halacha can only be understood within the framework of determining what an Ubar is. Isaac, your question is an excellent one. Perhaps there is a variable definition of Ubar on the basis of stage of fetal development. That's a level of sophistication that we haven't come to yet. But with respect to the fundamental issue, we've seen that there is clearly a divergence between what I call the school of Rashi, which is not only Rashi, but is the Tosfos Yontif, is the Tiferes Yisrael, is Rabbi Akiva Eiger, who take the composite evidence based on the Mishnah and Oelos and the Gemara and Sanhedrin to tell us that the principle of Ein Docha Nefesh Ritei Nefesh only goes into effect Kevan Sheyatza La'avir Olam. Before that point, we're not talking about a Nefesh. We are talking about a potential Nefesh, which is why we'll be Mechal Shabbos D'Oraisa. We're not talking about something that has no halachic status, but it doesn't have the ultimate status. Presumably, if we are not dealing with a Nefesh, according to Rashi, then we cannot be talking about the Isser Ritzicha. We could be talking about a different Isser. And maybe that Isser is encapsulated, as we said, by the great principle within Chazal, Mi'ika Midi to the Yisrael Shari Lo'ovid Kochavim Aser. Is it possible that there's something that could be totally permissible for us, yet prohibited for a non-Jew? All the way on the other end of the spectrum, we encountered Shitas HaRambam. The Rambam was unequivocal at every turn that the Ubar must be related to as a Nefesh. The only distinction between Bnei Noach and Bnei Yisrael is which punishment is affiliated with Hapalas HaUbarin. For Bnei Noach, unequivocally, we're dealing with Misa Bidei Adam, Shofech Dam HaAdam BaAdam Damo Yishafech. For members of Klal Yisrael, as is the case with Trefa, as is the case with disproportionate force against the Rodef, as is the case with Grama, and as is the case with Ubar B'mei Imo, as articulated by the Meshech Chachma on the basis of the Mechilta, what one would be dealing with is an Isser Ritzicha in conjunction with a Chiyuv Misa Bidei Shamayim. So we have two completely divergent traditions as to what exactly is going on here. Tosfos has two deos, as noted, with respect to Bnei Noah. What is the status of the Ubar vis-a-vis the life of the mother? I have a lot of my own to say about that, if time permitting. I would really like to get to that on Wednesday, where I think we can almost dispositively answer this question, ironically, even for the Rambam. I don't think there's much of a shadow of a doubt. Then I would like to get back to the basic question against the Rambam, is if it's a Rodef, when it's within the mother, and that gives a permission structure, an obligation structure, I should say, to take the life of the Ubar, so surely that should continue to apply once it's Yotzei La'avir Ha'olam. Where did that go? That was the essay of Reb Chaim and Reb Isser Zalman. We'll deal with that on Wednesday, and then we'll get down to, you know, questions of practical halacha, Reb Moshe Feinstein, the Tzitz Eliezer, questions of fetal development, Isaac, as you presented. And again, we'll try to proceed as systematically as possible. Thank you very much.